reveals to us a secret tool of living kept secret by our unwillingness to accept its truth. This ancient sage tells us quite openly that the act of simplicity, of living directly, is the doorway to the source of all being. Imagine if this is true. I implore you, when feeling lost or far away, try it. Try being direct, and the universe without a word will come alive. For your meditation, breathe slowly and recall a time when things were direct and uncomplicated. Keep breathing slowly and recall a time when things were indirect and a burden. As you inhale, feel the burden. As you exhale, feel the simplicity. What did the burden take from you? What did the simplicity awaken in you? February 12th, Making Tea. Given sincerity, there will be enlightenment. The Chinese Doctrine of the Mean, 200 BC. If we stop to truly consider it, making tea is a miraculous process. First, small leaves are gathered from plants that grow from unseen roots. Then boiling water is drained through the dried leaves. Finally, allowing the mixture to steep creates an elixir that, when digested, can be healing. The whole process is a model for how to make inner use of our daily experience. For isn't making tea the way we cipher through the events of our lives? Isn't the work of sincerity to pour our deepest attention over the dried bits of our days? Isn't patience the need to let the mixture of inner and outer brew until the lessons are fragrant and soothing on the throat? Isn't it the heat of our sincerity that steams the lessons out of living? Isn't it the heat of those lessons that makes us sip them slowly? Yet perhaps the most revealing thing about all this is that none of these elements alone can produce tea. Likewise, only by using them together can we make tea of our days and our sincerity and our patience. And none of it is healing without a willingness to drink from the tea of life. For your meditation, slowly and with symbolic care, make a cup of tea. As the tea is steeping, be mindful of your life and how you bring your sincerity and patience to bear on your days. Sip slowly and feel gratitude coat your throat. February 13th, What is Not Expressed. What is not expressed is depressed. It seems the more we express, that is, bring out what is in, the more alive we are. The more we give voice to our pain in living, the less build-up we have between our soul and our way in the world. However, the more we depress, the more we push down and keep in, the smaller we become. The more we stuff between our heart and our daily experience, the more we have to work through to feel life directly. Our unexpressed life can become a callus we carry around and manicure, but never remove. Experience can, in effect, lose its essential tenderness and poignancy as we mistakenly conclude that life is losing its meaning. To a man unaware of the cataracts filming his eyes, the world seems dimmer, not his seeing. How often do we find the world less stimulating, unaware that our heart is diminished because of its encasement in all that remains unexpressed? Let me give you a personal example. I have, for many reasons, including issues of my own making, forever felt invisible in family or group settings. Initially, this stemmed from fearfully pleasing a self-centered mother at all cost. It led to years of unexpressed hurts and rejections that accrued into a callous that guarded the heart within my heart. I am and have always been a very open and emotionally accessible person, but at a certain depth my core could not be touched. Though this started with mother, it affected the level at which I could relate with anyone. Eventually, this was not enough. I realized the world was not losing color, but that I was screening the deepest emotional colors out. That I state this so calmly and clearly in one sentence hardly reflects the difficult and slow, elusive way this awareness pained itself into my daily consciousness. Rather, it emerged in me gradually as I began to acknowledge and voice the feelings of invisibility I have carried all my life. Whatever your own example, it seems our authenticity is tied to what is depressed and what is expressed. Just as flowers need healthy root systems in order to blossom, feelings can only express their beauty when they are rooted cleanly within us, breaking ground in some manner, sprouting outside of us. It is that delicate, paradoxical inch of ground between surface and deep, between flower and root, between what is allowed out and what is allowed in, that continually determines whether we are living our lives or not. For your meditation, recall the last time you felt depressed. Sit quietly and look inside and see if there is anything lodged or pressing there against your mind or heart. It might be a disappointment or injury that you don't want to accept about yourself or others. Treat whatever you find like a splinter and soften yourself with the slowness of your breathing so it can be removed. As you breathe, remember that you are larger than this hurt pressing in on you. February 14th. Love at first sight. Where to deliberate, the love is slight. Whoever loved, not having loved at first sight. Christopher Marlowe. The true power of love at first sight is often missed because we insist on limiting its meaning to the sweep of falling into another person upon first meeting. To appreciate the deeper sense of this, we must uncover and reclaim the importance of first sight itself, which has more to do with seeing things essentially rather than physically for the first time. We all walk around within the numbness of our habits and routines so often that we take the marvels of ordinary life for granted. It is first sight that opens the freshness of each moment, unencumbered by any of our habits and routines. First sight is the moment of God sight, heart sight, soul sight. It is the seeing of revelation, the feeling of oneness that briefly overcomes us when nothing remains in the way. At its deepest and most real level, the notion of love at first sight is spoken of in every spiritual tradition as the reward for being fully awake. Such seeing anew restores our sense of being alive. Paradoxically, first sight is recurring. In the same way that we wake every day, we regularly return to first sight in the rhythm of our wakefulness of spirit. Whenever we can see with that original vision, with nothing between us and the life around us, we can't help but love what we see. To see so fundamentally opens us to love. To love so fundamentally is to see the world we're a part of as the vibrant, ongoing creation that it is. So it really manifests this way. At first sight, we find love. At our first true seeing, the love that is already there touches us. In this regard, first seeing is an ever-present threshold to the majesty of what is. Certainly and beautifully, this happens with other people when we, upon first truly seeing another, fall sweetly into the miracle of their presence. But this is also possible on a daily basis, upon first truly seeing ourselves, our world, our sense of God, again and again. I can work across from the same person for years, and one day, because my own suffering has opened me more fully than I can remember, and because the light floods that person's face, I can, for the first time, truly see who they are and feel love for them. I can walk by the same willow, season after season, and one day, because of the sheen of after rain and the lowness of the wind, I can truly see the willow like never before and feel love for the willow in all of us. I can, in the mirror late at night, after seeing myself hundreds of times, see the willow and the light and the other in my tired face, and know that sameness as the stuff of God. In truth, it has never been about first meeting, though this can happen, but more about first coming into view. As a breeze all spun out lets the water go clear, we finally stop talking, stop performing, stop pretending, and all tired out, we go clear, and the heart that rests in everything beats before us. For your meditation, close your eyes and breathe away your mind sight, your past sight, your future sight, your wounded sight. With each slow breath, feel the cool air of your birth sight, your first sight. Breathe slowly and imagine that the beat of your heart carries up the beginning of time sight. At the moment that you feel original, however briefly, open your eyes and bow with love to the first thing you see. February 15th. Being a Spiritual Warrior. Until the heart becomes an inlet, it cannot be free. It is true, there is such sadness in the world, but there's a difference between feeling the pain of things breaking, ending, or drifting apart, and the sharper pain that comes from measuring the inevitable events of life against some ideal of how we imagine things are supposed to be. In receiving hardships this way, life is always a falling off. Life is hard enough without viewing all our pain as evidence of some basic insufficiency we must endure. There's a beautiful Tibetan myth that helps us to accept our sadness as a threshold to all that is life-changing and lasting. This myth affirms that all spiritual warriors have a broken heart, alas, must have a broken heart, because it is only through the break that the wonder and mysteries of life can enter us. So what does it mean to be a spiritual warrior? It is far from being a soldier, but more the sincerity with which a soul faces itself in a daily way. It is this courage to be authentic that keeps us strong enough to withstand the heartbreak through which enlightenment can occur. And it is by honoring how life comes through us that we get the most out of living, not by keeping ourselves out of the way. The goal is to mix our hands in the earth, not to stay clean. I remember, in getting to know a new friend, how we shared our stories in an increasingly personal way. As I kept taking my turn, I heard myself tell of loved ones who have died, of my struggle through cancer, of a marriage that, despite the deepest commitment, didn't last, of years of being rejected as an artist, of losing a teaching job that was dear to me, of suffering a brutal estrangement from my parents. And just as I was feeling a strength come over me for facing life and being authentic, he wiped his mouth and said, "What a sad life you've had." It took me some time to withstand his judgment and his pity. but I looked at him across the night and kept breathing deeply through the break in my heart. In daily ways we are judged, discounted, even pitied for glories that only we can affirm. In the end, life is too magnificent and difficult for us to give away our elemental place in the journey. For your meditation, stand quietly by the sink and let the water run. Close your eyes and meditate on how life, like the water you hear, runs through our broken hearts, cleansing our hurt. Breathe deeply and feel the mystery wash through the break in your heart. Open your eyes and enter your day. February 16th. Misery. If peace comes from seeing the whole, then misery stems from a loss of perspective. We begin so aware and grateful. The sun somehow hangs there in the sky. The little bird sings. The miracle of life just happens. Then we stub our toe, and in that moment of pain, the whole world is reduced to our poor little toe. Now, for a day or two, it's difficult to walk. With every step, we are reminded of our poor little toe. Our vigilance becomes which defines our day: the pinch we feel in walking on a bruised toe, or the miracle still happening? It is the giving over to smallness that opens us to misery. In truth, we begin taking nothing for granted, grateful that we have enough to eat, that we are well enough to eat. But somehow, through the living of our days, our focus narrows like a camera that shutters down, cropping out the horizon, and one day we're miffed at a diner because the eggs are runny, or the hash isn't seasoned just the way we like. When we narrow our focus, the problem seems everything. We forget when we were lonely dreaming of a partner. We forget first beholding the beauty of another. We forget the comfort of first being seen and held and heard. When our view shuts down, we're up in the night annoyed by the way our lover pulls the covers or leaves the dishes in the sink without soaking them. In actuality, misery is a moment of suffering allowed to become everything. So when feeling miserable, we must look wider than what hurts. When feeling a splinter, we must, while trying to remove it, remember there is a body that is not splinter, and a spirit that is not splinter, and a world that is not splinter. For your meditation, breathe steadily and focus on one thing that is annoying or paining you. It might be how your car is running, or how your relationship is running, or how your sleep was disturbed by the noise of strangers. Breathe deeply, and keeping what is bothersome in view, widen your focus. Breathe thoroughly and accept the energy of all that exists outside your bother. February 17th. Endgame. Now there's nothing left but to keep dancing. I don't know if it's human nature or the way of life on Earth, but we seldom become all of who we are until forced to it. Some say that something in us rises to the occasion, that there is, as Hemingway called it, a grace under pressure that comes forth in most of us when challenged. Others say this talk of grace is merely a way to rationalize hard times and painful experience, a way to put a good face on tragedy. Yet beneath all the talk of tragedy and grace, I have come to believe that we are destined to be opened by the living of our days, and whether we like it or not, whether we choose to participate or not, we will, in time, every one of us, wear the deeper part of who we are as a new skin. Either by erosion from without or by shedding from within, and often by both, we are forced to live more authentically. And once the crisis that opened us passes, the real choice then becomes, will we continue such authentic living? It is no secret that cancer in its acuteness pierced me into open living, and I've been working ever since to sanctify that open living without crisis as its trigger. But can this be done without crisis pushing us off the ledge? That's the question now, years from the leap. How to keep leaping from a desire to be real, so as not to be shoved by an ever-lurking crisis? Perhaps the greatest moment of shedding and breaking for me came as I was being wheeled to rib surgery. I found myself numbly afraid, spinning from the Demerol shot, watching the hospital ceiling roll on by, and I found myself repeating over and over the following words as I waited on my stretcher. Death pushed me to the edge, nowhere to back off, and to the shame of my fears, I danced with abandon in his face. I never danced as free, and death backed off, the way dark backs off a sudden burst of flame. Now there's nothing left but to keep dancing. It is the way I would have chosen had I been born 3 times as brave. We are often called further into experience than we'd like to go, but it's this extra leap that lands us in the vibrant center of what it means to be alive. For your meditation, sit quietly with a trusted loved one and discuss a time of adversity you have endured and what it opened in you. Now that the adversity is behind you, how has your inner view of life changed? Discuss what it's like for you to sustain these new inner ways. February 18th, when feeling stuck. The same stream of life that runs through the world runs through my veins. Rabindranath Tagore. We are so achievement-oriented that we often surge right by the true value of relating to what's before us, because we think that accomplishing things will complete us, when it is experiencing life that will. Yet if we can outlast the urge to judge everything we encounter, a miracle starts to surround us in which painting, music, poetry, running water, flowers, wind through trees and open vistas, all touch and draw out their counterpart that lives quietly within us. The 19th century poet Gerard Manley Hopkins called this inner terrain inscape. And just as no landscape can flourish without sun and water, our inscape must be irrigated and drenched with many forms of life if we are to thrive. So when feeling stuck or disconnected from the miracle of life, as will happen to us all, try to listen, see, feel, and just take in. Try to let the energies of life stir their counterparts within you. In order to be whole, suspend your criticism. For life is not a matter of taste, but of awakening. Not a matter of finding things pleasing or disturbing, but of finding things completing. Not a matter of liking or disliking, but of opening the geography of one's soul. This is a meditation done to music. Close your eyes and listen to a piece of music that is new to you. As you breathe evenly, allow yourself to feel your like or dislike for it and try to let that go. As you breathe, allow yourself to meet the sheer energy of the music with the sheer energy of what is new in you. February 19th, instead of breaking. The glass blower knows while in the heat of beginning, any shape is possible. Once hardened, the only way to change is to break. With the precise tools of modern medicine, unborn children who are malforming or experiencing obstructions can now be operated on in utero. Profoundly, these state-of-the-art techniques reveal a deep, timeless truth about growth and healing. For just as amazing as the fact of these operations is the fact that these surgeries leave no scars once the infant is born. What this tells us is that if we tend to things at the deepest level, our repair will be so much a part of who we are that there will be no scar. It's easier to bend underneath the surface in the deep, timeless fluid of the beginning than to break once fully grown. But it's too late for me, you might say. I'm already full grown. Not so, for in the world of our inwardness, we are always growing and are blessed to carry that fluid beginning within us. It's never really out of reach. We can return and begin again by facing ourselves. In this way, we can go below our hardened ways to the soft impulses that birth them. Instead of breaking the bone of our stubbornness, we can nourish the marrow of our feeling unheard. Instead of breaking the bone of our fear, we can cleanse the blood of our feeling unsafe. Instead of counting the scars from being hurt in the world, we can find and re-kiss the very spot in our soul where we began to withhold our trust. For your meditation, sit quietly and bring to mind an aspect of your personality that tends to get in the way. It might be your own brand of stubbornness or distrust or envy. As you breathe steadily, allow yourself to trace this trait to its soft beginning. Without trying to name it or change it, simply surround this soft inner spot with your love. February 20th, Nicodemus and the Truth. How can one be born again? Nicodemus to Jesus. I often think of Nicodemus, the one Pharisee who secretly believed in Jesus and who would meet with him anonymously at night to have deep spiritual conversations, but who would never acknowledge his questions of spirit or his association with Jesus in the light of day. Of course, this did nothing to the essence of Jesus, but traumatically thwarted and plagued Nicodemus for the rest of his days. This story shows us the quiet pain that comes from not honoring what we know to be true, even if all we know to be true are the questions we are asking. It's even more useful to realize that we each carry a Jesus and a Nicodemus within us. That is, we each have a divine inner voice that opens us to truth, and a mediating social voice that is reluctant to show its truth to others. The famous British child psychologist D.W. Winnicott called these aspects of personality our true and false self. It is the true self that lets us know what is authentic and what has become artificial, while the false self is a diplomat of distrust, enforcing a lifestyle of guardedness, secrecy, and complaint. In everyday terms, this means that each time we experience a change in reality as we know it, we must choose whether to declare or hide what we know to be true. At such moments, we either need to bring the way we have been living into accord with that shift of reality, or we need to resist the change. Thus, in daily ways, whether we live in our true or false self depends on our willingness to stay real. And so, over time, staying real becomes the work of keeping our actions in the world connected to the truth of our inner being, allowing our true self to see the light of day. Very often we continue out of habit or fear to behave in old ways, even though we know that the way of things has changed. Time and again I have found myself at this critical juncture, having to admit that what was essential is no longer essential, and then needing to summon the courage to make the act of living essential again. I know that every time I hear or see the truth, but hold to the old way of being or thinking or relating, I am giving my life over to the Nicodemus in me, and in so doing, I embark on a divided life in which I listen to the divine inner voice secretly at night, but deny it day after day. But this moment of inner embarrassment, when we catch ourselves in the act of split living, is also the recurring chance for us to honor once again what we know to be true. For anyone, no matter how wounded or distressed, can in a moment of truth let the God within show itself out here in the world. However small or fleeting, this one repeatable act can restore our common and vital sense of being alive. For your meditation, sit quietly and recall the last time you felt a moment of inner embarrassment. That is, the last time you realized what you were doing was no longer authentic, but you kept doing it anyway. If you can, meditate on what made you keep doing what you knew to be untrue. What were you afraid would happen if you honored the truth as you felt it? If a similar situation were to happen tomorrow, how might you act differently? If you can, don't blame yourself for struggling like Nicodemus. Rather, comfort the Nicodemus in you that it is safe to honor what it knows in the light of day. February 21st. Cleaning out the wound. If I had experienced different things, I would have different things to say. So often I have felt troubled and guilty bearing witness to my pain, and yet not to makes things worse. Somehow in saying just what mother had done in her cruel need to be the center, or just what father couldn't do out of his fear of facing my mother, somehow telling the truth as I know it makes me feel like a bad person, as if I'm making my pain up, as if I'm hurting others by saying bad things about them. But the unshakable bottom of all this is that I'm not making things up. If I have unkind things to say, it's because I've experienced unkind things. And so my only guide in this witnessing is to be accurate and honest. While I am not a victim, I didn't ask for certain shaping experiences to happen to me. I didn't ask to be slapped or ridiculed as a boy, or to be mistreated by lifelong friends later in life. In truth, if I had experienced different things, I would have different things to say. What is most healing about bearing witness to things exactly as they are, including my own part in my pain, is that when the voice of the pain fits the pain, there is no room for distortion or illusion. In this way, truth becomes a clean bandage that heals, keeping dirt out of the wound. To voice things as they are is the nearest medicine. For your meditation, center yourself, and in the safety of your heart that has carried you this far, give voice to a wound you carry. Breathe deeply and try to be accurate, naming all those responsible for the wound, including yourself, if that is the case. Soothe the wound with your deepest breathing. Soothe yourself with the cleanness of the truth. February 22nd. Opposing voices. Let the opposing voices in your head speak. They are only finding their part in a larger, yet-to-be-heard song. Being alive is a paradox, an ongoing mix of things that on the surface don't always seem to make sense. But voicing what doesn't seem to make sense helps. It's like an orchestra tuning up to play together. We have no chance of discovering the fullness of our inner music if we don't let the players in our hearts and minds and spirits tune. Often confusion is the tension of trying to make sense of things too soon, before enough of the inner players have learned their parts. Often experience is the way that the heart and mind and spirit practice what they need to play. Isn't the trail of our relationships the time it takes for the heart to practice its part in the movement we call love? Isn't the trail of our honest questions the time it takes for the mind to practice its part in the movement we call wisdom? And isn't the trail of our changing beliefs the time it takes for the spirit to practice its part in the movement we call God? Isn't our trail of oneness, those brief moments when everything comes together, isn't this the time it takes for love and wisdom and God to bring the common place in us alive? This is a guided thought meditation. Center yourself and bring into view an issue that carries indecision or confusion for you right now. Though it will feel initially chaotic, breathe slowly and let the opposing views of this issue bubble up uncensored. Take your time. Breathe deeply, and let the opposing energies play themselves out. Rather than struggle to understand how these things go together, breathe steadily, and as if each energy is an instrument, feel the duet they are trying to play in you. Enter your day humming that tune. February 23rd. To hold nothing back. To hold nothing back in every breath is a spiritual practice. For 60 years I have found that hesitation, more than anything, has been the invisible hitch that has kept me from joy. I've found that the moment, with all its meaning, often moves on by the time I've reconsidered whether or not to enter it. I'm not saying we should always be impulsive. More to the point, I have discovered again and again that I usually know what I need to do, but just deny it. And it's this small hesitation, this small resistance to enter what is real, that makes life feel neutral or out of reach. To hold nothing back in every breath means staying committed to letting whatever we experience make its way in, and letting whatever is in make its way out. Holding nothing back means holding the intention to be an open vessel in a daily way. Simply and profoundly, our very breath can serve as a reminder that life is only possible if the exchange of inner and outer is undisturbed. Letting things in, feeling their impact, and in turn, letting things out, expressing cleanly what we feel, is a spiritual practice that rinses the mind and heart. For your meditation, meditate on a glass of water. When feeling centered, drink the water slowly, without hesitation. Exhale deeply and say softly to yourself, "I will hold nothing back in my effort to live. I will not hesitate to be." February 24th. Behind the urgency. When feeling urgent, you must slow down. I learned this over and over during my many crises of cancer. Unless someone is bleeding or can't breathe, unless there is some true physical requirement to act swiftly, a sense of urgency is a terrible illusion, a trick that happens over and again because life inside our skin and outside our skin are forever different. It's as hard as it is humbling. When feeling like I can't sit still, I need more than ever to sit still. When feeling like I will die if I don't have your approval, I need more than ever to die to my need for your approval. What we need is always harshly and beautifully right before us, disguised in the wrapping of our nearest urgency. We just refuse to accept this because it feels so difficult to face. The doorway to our next step of growth is always behind the urgency of now. Now more than ever, when all feels urgent, you must cut the strings to all events. Now more than ever, when the weights you carry seem tied to your wrists, you must not run or flail. Now more than ever, when each decision feels like the end, you must believe that each question is a beginning. More than ever, when you fear that being who you are is a knife to those you love, you must be strong inside where no one has seen you, for loving from there can only make those you love grow. Now, more than ever, when feeling that you are the source and recipient of all pain, you must bow your head till the ancient channel from sky to heart can reopen, till you remember that you are a blessed piece of spirit dust in spirit wind. Now, more than ever, you must breathe till your ounce of breath becomes the sky again. In this way, pray to know your place in the human family like you've never known it. In this way, pray to have your true self inch through your turmoil. In this way, love yourself the way you love the emptiness of time. Love yourself the way you love your children or your dog or your dearest friend, without reservation. In this way, today with all its hardships will spill into tomorrow, and decisions will become as clear as streams thawing. For your meditation, center yourself and feel the urgencies that pull at you. Feel the tension of each like a string stretched taut. With each breath, untie yourself one urgency at a time. However briefly, breathe freely, even for a moment, untied to any urgency at all. February 25th. Cutting a path. No matter where we dig or climb, we come upon the fire we left untended. Carl Jung had a dream that he was cutting a path in the woods, unsure where it was leading, but working hard at it nonetheless. Tired and sweating, he came upon a cabin in a clearing. He dropped his tools and approached the cabin. Through the window, he saw a being in prayer at a simple altar. The door was open and Jung went in. As he drew closer, he realized that the being in prayer was himself, and that his life of cutting a path was this being's dream. What Jung brings to us is the never-ending task of deciding to whom we entrust our life, our true or false self. For all the seriousness with which we run about in the world, fixing, denying, projecting, and sacrificing, for all the schemes and strategies and alliances and positioning for reward, it is all an unreal dream to the center of our being that waits for us far inside while we hack our way through. Without knowing it, we, like Jung, work hard at cutting a path to our deeper self that waits patiently for us to arrive, all tired, aching, and out of breath. Once that path is cleared, and once the being at our center is discovered, we can return to the world in relationship with our soul. We can discover a deeper, more peaceful sense of home. For your meditation, be still and close your eyes, and as you meditate, journey inwardly to the cabin where your soul awaits. Drop all you are carrying at the door. Drop all that waits to be done or redone. As you breathe, enter the cabin and wait with open arms for the center of your being to realize you are there. As you breathe, feel your soul embrace you. Embrace back. Savor that moment. February 26th. At the pace of what is real. Stop talking, stop thinking, and there is nothing you will not understand. Sang San. Like most people I know, I struggle with taking too much on, with doing too many things, with moving too fast, with overcommitting, with overplanning. I've learned that I must move, quite simply, at the pace of what is real. While this pace may vary, life always seems vacant and diminished when I accelerate beyond my capacity to feel what's before me. It seems we run our lives like trains, speeding along a track laid down by others, going so fast that what we pass blurs on by. Then we say we've been there, done that. The truth is that blurring by something is not the same as experiencing it. So no matter how many wonderful opportunities come my way, no matter the importance placed on these things by others who have my best interests at heart, I must somehow find a way to slow down the train that is me until what I pass by is again seeable, touchable, feelable. Otherwise, I will pass by everything, can put it all on my resume, but will have experienced and lived through nothing. For your meditation, consider three things you must do today. Carefully put two down. Immerse yourself in the one thing that is left. February 27th. The ropes and wheels that carry us. Beauty is truth, truth, beauty. That is all you know on earth, and all you need to know. John Keats. These are the famous last lines of Ode on a Grecian Urn, uttered by the young English poet, dying of tuberculosis at the age of 24. The poem is an understandable complaint by a tender being against the harshness of life. But suddenly, by voicing his pain of living, the young poet comes upon a profound realization. When Keats says beauty is truth, truth, beauty, we are forced to ask, are they the same? Deeply, I think not. Rather, like X and Y chromosomes, they make up the fundamental elements of life that no one can do without. They are the yin and yang of existence. One cleanses the wound while the other heals the wound. This is all you need to know. Beauty, wherever we find it, is the salve that keeps us vital and fresh. But truth, in its uncompromised and naked story, no matter how harsh, has a beauty all its own that is cleansing. This is why we must remember the Holocaust and other atrocities exactly as they were. This is why it is essential to bear honest witness to our own naked stories. Still, as wise as the message he came upon is, there is an equal lesson in how young Keats came upon it. For only by voicing our tender pains can we find our way to the deeper beauties and truths that, like ropes and wheels, can carry us. For your meditation, sit quietly and feel your own tenderness in being alive. Breathe slowly, and as you inhale, allow the naked truth of one tenderness to cleanse you. Breathe fully, and in the next breath, allow the beauty around you to revitalize the place in you that is raw. February 28th. The stones at Chimayo. I'd rather learn from one bird how to sing than teach 10,000 stars how not to dance. E. Cummings. On the way to Chimayo, a woman saw two Spanish farmers repositioning stones in a riverbed to redirect the flow. She felt compelled to help. She had the feeling that this had been done for centuries, their mothers and fathers, their grandmothers and grandfathers, each in their own time and way, picking up the same stones pushed about by storm or drought, and putting them back so the water can continue. It seems this is the never-ending work of relationship, each of us in our own time and way, moving the stones between us, repositioning the heavy things that get in the way, so the life of feeling can continue. The weather of simply living jams things up, and we, like every generation before us, must roll up our pants and sleeves, step into the river, and unclog the flow. Of course, we need to ask, what are the stones pushed about between us? What are the heavy things that keep getting in the way? No doubt they are infinite and particular, but often they are made of habits of not seeing, not hearing, not feeling, not being present, not risking the truth, not risking the heart's need to live out in the open. That we close off, jam up, spill over and dry up are all part of being human in the gravity of time. That we feel compelled to stop and help even strangers move the heavy thing out of the way is an impulse known as love. For your meditation, identify something heavy within you that seems to be in the way. Does it have to do with a habit of not? If so, try to name what it is you are not allowing to flow freely within you. If you are not seeing, breathe slowly and begin the vow to see. If you are not listening, breathe slowly and begin the vow to listen. Be honest in assessing how heavy this stone in you is. If you need help in moving it, whom will you ask and when? February 29th. Who's to say? Who's to say the effort to be real isn't the beginning of wings? Who's to say that the budding of wings from the ribs of small birds doesn't begin with the impulse within them to live? Who's to say that the butterfly breaking through its cocoon isn't the result of its being tired of living in a tight weave of its own making? Who's to say that the migration of flamingos from South America to Africa doesn't begin with a yearning to eat the yellow ribbon that keeps lining the horizon? And who's to say the color of passion doesn't line our faces the instant we grow tired of living in a tight cocoon of our own making? Who's to say the journey to love doesn't begin the instant we give voice to that loneliness no one wants to hear? And who's to say the journey to peace doesn't sprout like a small wing the instant we let our feelings find their place in the world? In truth, every effort that is allowed its full beat within will ripple as a birth of some kind in the world. For your meditation, center yourself and breathe deeply. At the high point of inhalation, imagine the still center as the inner sun of spirit. Let it flood you with its light each time you exhale. Enter your day, inviting one deep feeling to sprout from you.
March 1st, The One Direction. Live deep enough, and there is only one direction. No matter whom the apprentice talked to, if she listened close enough and long enough, the words all went back to the same source, as if there were only one large thing speaking. No matter how many eyes she looked deeply into, they all eventually revealed the same shimmer, as if there were only one large thing seeing. No matter how many pains she soothed, the cries all sounded from the same human hurt, as if there were only one large thing feeling. When she brought all this to her master walked her in silence through the woods to a clearing, where they sat on a fallen tree. The light was flooding through, covering everything. The master placed a stone in her one hand and a small flower in her other, and said, "Feel the warmth from both stone and flower. See how both are covered differently with the same light? Now trace the light of each back to the sun." The apprentice heard the one large thing speaking in the master's voice, saw the one large thing shimmer in the master's eyes, and even felt the same human hurt in the master's soft silence. The light grew even stronger, and the master said, "We are all just small stones and little flowers, searching for our sun. What you have seen under words, behind many eyes, and beneath all cries, is the one direction." For your meditation, meditate on one recent moment of lightheartedness you have felt. Breathe deeply and smile. Now meditate on one recent moment of lightheartedness you witnessed in a loved one or friend. Breathe deeply and smile. Continue your deep breathing and let these two moments find their sameness. Focus on this lightness of heart as you would a sun out of view, and feel the one direction. March 2nd. More power to you. Originally, the word power meant able to be. In time, it was contracted to mean to be able. We suffer the difference. I was waiting for a plane when I overheard two businessmen. One was sharing the good news that he had been promoted, and the other in congratulation said, "More power to you." I've heard this expression before, but for some reason, I heard it differently this time and thought, what a curious sentiment. As a good wish, the assumption is that power is the goal. Of course, it makes a huge difference if we are wishing others worldly power or inner power. By worldly power, I mean power over things, people, and situations, controlling power. By inner power, I mean power that comes from being a part of something larger, connective power. I can't be certain, but I'm fairly sure the wish here was for worldly power, for more control. This is commonplace and disturbing, as the wish for more always issues from a sense of lack. So the wish for more power really issues from a sense of powerlessness. It is painfully ironic that in the land of the free, we so often walk about with an unspoken and enervating lack of personal freedom. Yet the wish for more controlling power will not set us free, any more than another drink will quench the emptiness of an alcoholic in the grip of his disease. It makes me think of a game we played when I was 9 called King of the Hill, in which 7 or 8 of us found a mound of dirt, the higher the better, and the goal was to stand alone on top of the hill. Once there, everyone else tried to throw you off, installing themselves as king of the hill. It strikes me now as a training ground for worldly power. Clearly, the worst position of all is being king of the hill. You're completely alone and paranoid, never able to trust anyone, constantly forced to spin and guard every direction. The hills may change from a job to a woman to a prized piece of real estate, but those on top can be so enslaved by guarding their position that they rarely enjoy the view. I always hated King of the Hill, always felt tense in my gut when king, sad when not, and ostracized if I didn't want to play. That pattern has followed me through life. But now, as a tired adult, when I feel alone and powerless atop whatever small hill I've managed to climb, I secretly long for anyone to join me. Now I'm ready to believe there's more power here together. For your meditation, sit quietly and recall a recent situation in which you exerted control. What did having a sense of control do for you? What did having a sense of control require of you? how much of your need to control was necessary? What would have happened if you let others join you on the hill of your control? March 3rd. In the living. Every person's condition is a solution in hieroglyphic to those inquiries they would put. We act it as life before we apprehend it as truth. Ralph Waldo Emerson. Each life is a language no one knows. With every heartbreak, discovery, and unexpected moment of joy, with every lift of music that touches us where we didn't think we could be touched, with every experience, another letter in our alphabet is decoded. Take a step, learn a word, feel a feeling, decode a sign, accept a truth, translate a piece of the mystery written in your heart. Before we live what's next, it always seems like there is some answer we need to arrive at. But daring to enter, we are humbled to discover again and again that the act of living itself unravels both the answer and the question. When we watch, we remain riddles to be solved. When we enter, we become songs to be sung. When life feels far off, remember that a flute is just something hard with holes until it's played. So too the heart. As matches are just sticks until lit, as ice is not quenching till thawed, questions and problems remain obstacles until lived. In this way, the life of every soul waits like sheet music to be played. What good are we if never played? For your meditation, simply close your eyes and breathe, feeling your mouth as a hole in your being. Breathe simply and evenly, knowing that only when life moves through do holes become openings. Open your eyes and breathe with your heart. Feel the music of life moving through you as silence. March 4th. For what are we saving? If the love I have isn't working, what good is money? So often we put externals first, out of worry, out of fear, out of obligation. We think we're being good Puritans by saying no to what stirs us. In the 60s, the well-known psychologist Abraham Maslow conceived of a hierarchy of needs in which he established that human beings must provide for basic physical needs, such as food and shelter, before they can attend to inner needs, such as self-esteem and right relationship. While this is in part true, I believe there is a dimension of the inner life that is as imperative and equivalent as food and shelter. Without the fulfillment of these basic inner needs, we are just fed and sheltered bodies void of life. Without love, truth, and compassion, all the comforts of modern life don't matter, because we are simply reduced to biological machines, not even as present as animals. Without this understanding, we often defer the risk to love. I need to establish myself before I can get involved. I need nice clothes first. I'll become physically desirable first. I'll eliminate all my problems first. We also defer love once it is before us, under the guise of safeguarding our future. I won't call long distance now because I'll need the money when I retire. I won't meet them at this concert right now because I'll need money for a new car in 6 years. I can't afford to enter counseling with my partner because we need storm windows. Certainly we have to balance and make choices, but with no love in the house, there's no need for storm windows. When I was ill, I faced the very real possibility of dying, and suddenly the little money I'd saved, however prudent I was, didn't matter. It was all worthless. It became immediately clear that the only true purpose of money was to help make love work. When ill, I didn't hesitate to make all those long-distance calls.